And welcome now to the midday for a Friday with Stephanie over there and Norman right here.
And composer Philip Rothman. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's a pleasure to be here.
We often have guest artists to have a discussion with on the midday, and it's very nice to welcome a composer for a change.
You know, it's interesting. Most of the composers that orchestras play these days are no longer living. And so when there is a composer that is living and very much alive and writing music, it is a little bit of a rarity. So it's really exciting to be a part of this residency.
He's breathing, isn't he?
We'll hope that you stay in that category for a good long time.
Yeah, so far.
Philip is the composer in residence this season with the Green Bay Symphony Orchestra, and they have their season opener tomorrow night, and they'll be featuring one of his pieces called Morningside Run. And can you tell us what a composer in residence does and what you're going to be doing with the Green Bay Orchestra this season?
Certainly. This is part of a national program that is sponsored by two very formidable organizations, national organizations called Meet the Composer and the League of American Orchestras. And together they jointly identify orchestras and composers that want to work together to advance the cause of new music in the orchestra. As I just said a moment ago, a lot of times orchestras will play, you know, they won't play a lot of living composers. So this is a chance for composers to be part of the orchestral repertoire and not only to have the music perform, but to get the composer out there working with not only the orchestra, but in the community. You know, a lot of times the composer can be the catalyst between the orchestra and the community because the orchestra administration is often so overstretched, you know, working so hard, putting on concerts. Of course, the musicians are rehearsing. They're very busy. The conductor is busy studying scores, doing fundraising, all the things that a music director has to do. And so here's the composer, and the composer has already written the music. We don't need to rehearse. We don't need to practice in the practice room. We're here. And so some of the things that I've done in the past and have been doing here and will continue to do over the course of this season are things like going to local schools, local universities, whether it be a music class or a humanities class, and talking about what it means to be a composer, what we do, how my career took hold, and understanding that the composer is part of the music ecology. It's interesting in the pop music world, of course, all the popular music is new. You know, new music is very much a living, breathing thing. And so, when we get to the classical side of the equation, it's not so much. But that's part of the idea behind having the composer here, is to try to change that. And so I'll be working with not only local schools, but I'll be talking to other civic groups and talking about not only composing, but my business model. How do I make a living as a composer? What type of work do I do? Not only in the classical world, but I do some film work and some commercial work as well. I'll be talking to the board of the orchestra and hopefully have a mutual understanding a little bit more of what it means to have a composer. And Green Bay has really set a very high standard for this, because I am the fourth in a series of composers annually. For the past 4 years, they've had composers visit and compose pieces, and so the capstone of the residency will be a commission, a premiere of a commissioned work that they have that they'll be performing in April. And so I haven't started writing that piece yet, partly because I want to work with the orchestra now in the piece that they are going to be performing tomorrow, and get a sense of the strengths of the orchestra, the sound of the orchestra, and then I'll start writing the piece this fall, and they will premiere it in April. So a lot of activity crammed into three non-contiguous weeks of the course of the season.
Well, here's a piece that you wrote not too long ago, 2003. It's actually in two movements. We'll hear the first of them, and it's called Souvenir. And what's the orchestra here, and what is it a souvenir of?
That's a great question. The orchestra is the Waterloo Cedar Falls, Iowa Symphony Orchestra, And they are a very fine orchestra in the heartland of Iowa. And they commissioned me because they were opening their season with a concert of all Brahms. And you may be wondering, well, you know, what do I have to do with Brahms? And the question is, I didn't know that myself until they asked me to do it. But the conductor said, you know, I want to do something that is evocative of Brahms, but I'll leave it to you, you know, up to you as to how you want to do that. And he said, you know, I want to put the piece on the middle of the program, opening the second half, which is unusual. A lot of times new pieces are done right at the opening. There's a lot of theories for that. Sometimes it's like, well, let's get the new piece out of the way and then, you know, get to the meaty part of the repertoire.
Sometimes put in the middle, too, like a sandwich, you know, you have the nice thing and then you got the thing you have to do and then you have the other nice thing.
That's right. You know, in this case, he said, you know, I want this to, in essence, the latter of what you said is actually true. He had a very, I think, if I remember correctly, it was one of the piano concertos on the first half and then one of the symphonies on the second half. I can't remember which, but nevertheless, I was to be sandwiched between these two, huge, Brahms staples of the repertoire. And I was thinking, well, you know, what is this? It's really an intermezzo. And then I had recalled that Brahms had written these very lovely piano intermezzos, a series of them.
Late in life.
Late in life, yeah, the high opus numbers. And so what I decided to do is take that, take the melodies from two of those compositions, specifically the opus 116, number 2, and the opus 118, number 2. But I didn't want to quote them in a traditional way, and you'll hear in the composition, you'll hear these melodies, but they're in a very, I don't know, let's say, you know, kind of an ethereal way. They actually are fused together. I don't quote the entire melody. I actually create a new melody from these two separate pieces. And the reason I entitled it Souvenir, and I have to say my wife actually is great because she helps me title the pieces. She's not a musician, and so it's great to have someone's perspective that is not so involved with the composition of the piece. And she said, you know, and she is fluent in French, and she says, you know, it kind of is like a memory of Brahms' music, the way you would maybe, you know, if you have a dream, if you're dreaming, and you all this alternate reality goes on in your dream, and you wake up and you think, what was going on? I was doing all these crazy things, and it was kind of the same thing that was happening to these tunes. They were kind of swirling about in a way that was very different from the way that Brahms would write it. And so she said, well, it's kind of like a memory or a dream of those Brahms tunes, and the you know, the French word for memory is souvenir, and of course we have it in English. It means, you know, it's not something that you go into a shop and get a souvenir, but it is, you know, ultimately the root of that is it is a memory of where you've come, and you want to remember it. So the piece is titled Souvenir for that reason, and you know, I think it was an interesting way of bridging the gap between these two Brahms pieces and getting a different take on it.
And here's the first of the two movements of Souvenir by our guest today, Philip Rothman. Wealth of sounds and textures, as they say in music, all kinds of instrumentation coming in there. And I can't say as I did pick up the Brahms intermezzo in there. I'm sure it's there, but as you say, it's
hiding.
It's hiding, mm-hmm. Yeah, which is often done by composers.
Yeah.
We're talking with the composer, Philip Rothman, whose music will be performed, a piece of it, will be performed with the Green Bay Symphony soon, tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night at 7:30 in Green Bay. Information's at greenbaysymphony.org, and you can find information about Philip at philiprothman.com. That piece we just heard was called Souvenir. That was the first movement from Souvenir, performed by the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony, Jason Weinberger conducting. Philip, you have won a number of awards. Your music has been heard at Lincoln Center and Carnegie Hall and performed by orchestras all over the country. How did you get started as a composer? And you mentioned a business model for being a composer. What's your secret, and how do you make a living as a composer?
Well, it's a question, you know, interestingly enough, I often get at schools when students are studying and studying very hard in music school. They're studying theory, they're studying history, they're practicing their instrument, they're spending all day in a practice room, you know, spending the nights cracking the books open, and yet when we send them out in the world with their degrees, they don't know what to do because finding a job is very difficult. Whether you're trying to find an orchestral job or as a performer, or whether you're trying to find a teaching job, I have a lot of colleagues that went to very good schools as I did, and you know, there are 200 or 250 applicants for every teaching position that's out there.
We should mention you have a master's from Juilliard.
That's right. And so the question is, you know, what do you do? And I'll back up and answer your first question in a nutshell, and then, you know, return to this. You had asked how I got started as a composer, and I was very fortunate growing up in the public schools in outside of Buffalo, New York, is where I'm from. And I played piano as a young boy, and actually got away from it for quite some time. I didn't play for a number of years until I returned to high school, and then got started in the band. And there's a lot of schools across the country, and I know here in Wisconsin for sure, there is a very strong tradition of the band, the wind ensemble in the schools. And so I started playing percussion, and I had just terrific teachers. The band director was very encouraging. He would teach me, give me timpani lessons during his free time, and he didn't have to do that. He wasn't required to do that, but he saw some promise in me and actually encouraged me to practice. And, of course, I couldn't take the timpani home, so the only time that I could practice was at school.
Interesting point.
I think there would have been a revolt from the rest of my family if I had timpani. I did have a drum set at home, which was in the basement, so to try to mitigate the sound. But in any event, you know, I ended up playing and getting into the all-state bands and really started to enjoy it quite a lot. And I started getting into composition, and I had a very good choral teacher. And then my senior year of high school had a new band director who was trained as a composer as well. So it was just a really lucky set of circumstances that I found myself in, where these teachers were able to nurture this budding interest that I had. And I actually started playing, teaching myself by ear, some pop music, things that were popular in that day, Billy Joel, you know, on piano and mm-hmm. things like that, and was figuring out on the sheet music, you know, what is an F major chord? What does this mean? What is a C minor chord? And just trying to figure this out chord by chord, note by note. And then what happened was, I was like, well, what if I change the C minor chord to a C major chord? Or what if I change it to an A minor chord? Or what if I change this melody? And without really knowing it, that's kind of how you start composing, is just kind of making stuff up. That's what composing is. Yeah.
And all the best composers often start with another's work.
That's right. Well, they say, and I know I'm actually quoting somebody here. I can't remember what composer said this, but they say, good composers borrow, and great composers steal. So
something to be said.
Yeah, that's right. And so it was very interesting, and I started arranging things and was encouraged at that high school level, and started writing original music, and actually started writing orchestral music without really even knowing what I was doing. And my teacher, my high school teacher, he said, you know what, you can study all these books you want, but at the end of the day, you should just write. And, you know, you'll make mistakes. And I, sure enough, the first piece I wrote, it's actually never been performed. And because I was writing things out of range and all sorts of things that didn't work. But it was a great training because it did get a reading with a youth orchestra and I was able to work out a lot of the kinks. And then when I got to college, I actually wrote another piece called Overture for Our City. And I was actually hesitant to show it to my professors because they said, well, you know, when I started studying, they said, well, you know, we won't have you write orchestral music as an undergraduate. That's too advanced. We'll start, you know, you'll write some chamber music and different instruments. And so I had this in my back pocket, and I actually had showed it to another young conductor at the time whose name is Michael Christie. He's also from the Buffalo area. And had actually just called him up out of the blue because they did a feature on him in the local newspaper. And he was very receptive to my music and said, you know, I don't know when or where I'm going to be able to do this piece, but I'd like to do it sometime. And I said, that's great. You know, and that was that. And sure enough, he called me up a few months later and said, you know, I want to do this piece of yours. I have a guest conducting engagement with the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra. And he was, I think, 23 at the time, and I was 20 or 21 years old. Maybe not even that. Maybe I think it was maybe 19 or 20. It was 1997. So he was just very encouraging. And so the Buffalo Philharmonic, my hometown orchestra, performed Overture for our City on that program. And it was very interesting. In Buffalo, there's a great amount of civic pride in that community, going to, you know, from the Buffalo Bills, the hockey team, to the orchestra and the art galleries as well. And they promoted this very heavily as hometown, you know, local boys and girl. There was a flutist that had grown up in Buffalo, and she was also a soloist on the program on another piece. And it was the second highest attendance of the entire season, and this for a new work on the program, an unknown conductor. So it goes to show you that if things are approached in a way that it's interesting for people to connect to, people will come and hear the music. So that's how I got my start in terms of orchestral music and music in general. Now Michael Christie, of course, is the conductor of the Phoenix Symphony, so he's doing very well for himself.
What a wonderful way to start! And you continued with a great, successful career, and including your works performed by the West Point Band, right? Well, we're going to hear one of those works, Norman.
Sure. Yes, we can squeeze that in. We'll be doing the quiz question a little bit late, but we can accommodate this short, snappy piece from the United States Military Academy Band. It's the Movement, Fanfare, and Tribute, which our guest Philip Rothman wrote in 2000. There you got to hear the composer as timpanist in his own solo there, too. But that was not the plan, was it?
It wasn't. Actually, I was playing bass drum and cymbals, and that was recorded by the West Point Military Academy Band. And I was up there to supervise recording in advance of the official premiere, which took place at the Grant Monument, Grant's Tomb in Upper Manhattan. And they happened to be short a percussionist when they were doing the recording. They were scrambling around trying to figure out how they're going to cover all the parts. And I kind of volunteered and said, well, you know, I'm a percussionist. And they welcomed me aboard. And I have to tell you, it was very nerve-wracking because if I screwed up playing my own music, that would not look very good. But luckily, I counted very intently, and I hit all the notes.
Not setting a good example. Well, in a moment, we'll get to the 12:30 quiz question. We'll call it a 12:35 quiz question today, and we'll hear a bit more, too, from our guest today, Philip Rothman, here on Wisconsin Public Radio. So, before we get to more from our guest today, the quiz question.
Today's quiz question.
What about yesterday's?
Oh, yesterday's quiz question.
Got to observe
I'm
the
getting
protocol.
Ahead of myself. That's right.
Do things according to Hoyle here.
That's right.
Yesterday's question was, an 1898 story by a Philadelphia lawyer was the inspiration for what Italian opera?
Philadelphia lawyer, Italian opera? Which one is it?
Well, the opera would be Madama Butterfly, Puccini.
Story of the officer in Japan.
And the hapless lady.
Mm-hmm.
Not the first or only American story that Puccini picked up on, of course. The Girl of the Golden West, another. That was yesterday's question. Here's today's.
Warner Communications paid $28 million for the copyright to this ubiquitous song in 1988.
There's that word, ubiquitous, again. We like it. It's fun to say, isn't it?
It is fun to say. Warner Communications paid $28 million for the copyright to this ubiquitous song in 1988. If you know the answer, you can give us a call at 800-442-7106 or from Madison 263-1236.
Or you can email us between now and 1 o'clock at midday at WPR.org.
Our guest this half hour has been composer Philip Rothman. He's the composer in residence this season with the Green Bay Symphony Orchestra. They are kicking off tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Green Bay Widener Center for the Performing Arts, and they'll be doing a program including Philip Rothman's Morningside Run, which we'll hear in just a moment. Also on the program is Beethoven's Triple Concerto and Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5. For information, you can visit greenbaysymphony.org or you can call 920-465-2217. For information about Philip Rothman, he has his own website at philiprothman.com.
Morningside, isn't that the name of a park not too far from Grant's Tomb?
It sure is, actually. It's a neighborhood that I would run in during the early morning of the day, and it's along Riverside Drive, and of course, actually, Grant's Tomb is right off of Riverside Drive. The piece was commissioned actually by the New York Youth Symphony, and it was premiered in Carnegie Hall in 2002. They had asked the New York Youth, I should just say briefly, the New York Youth Symphony has an excellent track record as far as performing new music. They commission and premiere one piece on every single concert that they do. They do three concerts a year in Carnegie. And for the last, 20, 25 years or so, perhaps even more, they have premiered a new piece on every single concert. They asked me to write a piece based on New York. Other than that, they left it open. They didn't say what it had to be, what type of piece it had to be, fast, slow, whatever. And so what I wanted to do was do something that was very evocative of my personal life in New York. I go running every other day. I now go in Central Park because I live near there, but I used to go alongside Riverside Drive and Morningside Park. And the piece is just really a soundscape of all the different things that you may hear during the course of the early morning in Manhattan. And it served a double meaning as well, because I often use the time that I go running as time away from the keyboard, away from the computer, to think about larger compositional issues. You know, how am I going to get past this transition, or how am I going to end the piece? And a lot of times, a lot of people, you know, like to think in the shower, or they, you know, have some ideas that come to them at opportune moments. And for me, running really kind of clears my head and allows me to think, and allows me to distract from the, you know, pain that I might be feeling in my knee or my foot. So it's useful. So this is a short 8-minute piece about that.
Morningside Run, and this is the Denver Young Artist Orchestra?
Yes.
Morningside Run by Philip Rothman, whose music will be performed in Green Bay with Green Bay Symphony tomorrow night.
This was the Denver Young Artists Orchestra, Adam Flatt conducting.